Yeah. Welcome to the motherfucking Soulcast. Reporting live from the freezing East Coast. Today's guest is Simalise. Simalise is a black, queer, anarchist woman based out of DC, Baltimore area, and an incredible rapper. Comes from, you know, but comes from the same sort of generation that I come up out of, you know, and you can tell by her rapping that, you know, she's been just fucking doing this forever, and, you know, it's cool to hear radical artists that just have so much stylistic, just so much style. So I'm really excited for people to hear this music and people to hear this interview. You know, interviews like this are really why I started doing this podcast. You know, when you hear artists who, you know, who are essentially theorists, it's incredible to me. And not only is she a theorist, but she is on the ground doing the work more than a lot of activists. You know, she comes from a background of kind of black nationalism and those sort of movements, and, you know, has maintained that throughout her life. And so this is just an awesome interview. It's inspiring. And I never had heard of her music until I saw the Trouble documentary with the interviewed so many rappers. And I was just like, who the fuck is that? Like, how have I never heard this before? And that's, you know, that's why radical media is so important. So, you know, shit like It's Going Down, Crime Think, Submedia, like, these projects are vital not only to spreading awareness of radical movements and organizing and this kind of stuff and analysis, but also to spread radical culture. So much love to Submedia for making that documentary. Here we are. Yeah, I look forward to, you know, to working on music with Simalise, and yeah, this is just great music. So check it out. If you dig it, go support her work. All the money made from these records goes right back into the organizing work that she's doing through the Maroon House. And yeah, so that's about all I have to say about that. Again, this is a great interview. Support her work. And yeah, if you dig this podcast, hop over to fucking Patreon. Go to patreon.com/SOLEONE. Become a soul subscriber. Appreciate it. And yeah, and before we start this interview, let's hear from some comrades in the Channel Zero Podcast Network. And as I'm editing this interview, I'm realizing on my end there was some fucked up audio shit. So for that, apologies.
Join us for Kiteline, a weekly radio program on Channel Zero Network that focuses on issues in the prison system. With over 50 episodes already released, you can hear informative and riveting stories about the impact of prisons on people both inside and outside of the prison walls, and how they fight back. Kiteline is intended as means of communication between people across prison walls. Our goal at Kiteline is to amplify the voices of those within the prison system while encouraging dialogue with those on the outside. Hear us on the Channel Zero Network and visit our website for more information or previous episodes at kitelineradio.noblogs.org.
How can we imagine a world beyond prisons and police, borders and surveillance?
Rust Belt Abolition Radio is an abolitionist media and movement building project based in Detroit, Michigan.
Each monthly episode amplifies the voices of those impacted by mass incarceration and explores ongoing work in the movement to abolish the carceral state and racial capitalism.
Tune in to Rust Belt Abolition Radio here on the Channel Zero Network and visit www.rustbeltradio.org to learn more.
Simalise, welcome to the motherfucking Soulcast.
Yo, what's up? What's up? Glad to be here.
Hell yeah. It's awesome to talk to you. I didn't even know your music until I watched that Submedia Trouble documentary, and word. I was just blown away. I'm happy to meet you.
Word, absolutely. Like, I'm more of an underground artist, you know, like your favorite rapper type of MC, but it's just dope that I was able to even get into that documentary and just, you know, represent for Southern, you know, rappers. Virginia is not that Southern, but we're pretty, you know, we were the head of the Confederacy at one point. So to be an anarchist at that, and to be able to have our perspective shown, that was dope. And then I got to find out all these other artists, like you said, that I didn't even know about. And now I'm just listening to them like all the time.
That's so dope. Yeah, I love that he made that documentary. I was like, you know, because sometimes I get jaded about rap music. And
So the radio especially is pretty damn depressing.
I know, it's so funny because in that interview, I interviewed Frank about the documentary, and I was like, he's like, man, I don't watch movies listening to people talking about killing Puerto Ricans. He's like, why am I going to listen to music with people talking about killing women?
You know? Yeah. It gets depressing, and it's just, you know, it was refreshing as hell to see the variety. Like, people forget that hip hop is a global thing, and there is variety. There are choices. Like, you literally don't have to listen to whack shit. You really don't, because it's just too many MCs out there that are bringing, like, they're all, and it's still like, they're not, you know, this is my 20th album and I don't really give a fuck what I'm saying. No, they're like still hungry and they have a lot to prove, and I love it. You know, I stay hungry on the microphone for real.
Yeah, I try to stay hungry too, because I'm always hungry.
Yeah.
Me too. Vegans are always hungry. well, you know, it's funny because I've done a lot of stuff in Europe, and that's pretty much my experience. But like, when you go to a place like Greece, you know, there'll be like whole bills of anti-fascist hip hop, and this is like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, and we're still not there. You know,
I wish the U.S. scene would build it up like that also. For one point, we were trying to do like the U.S. version of Love Music, not racism. But it didn't kind of, we got a couple of gigs together where we kind of had like rock, punk, electric and hip hop, like, you know, merging together for some shows, but we didn't really get a good foot, you know, on the ground with it. But I would like to see that pick back up so that we can have more like really big Antifa shows. And more people can, you know, participate who have kind of been left out of the dialogue altogether. But they're still, you know, they're still anarchists. They're still Antifa. They're still doing this same, you know, mutual aid work and, you know, taking care of their communities and bashing fash and all that shit. But they don't get heard from. So it would be dope to see people collaborate and we have more big, even tours, you know, and just link up like that.
Festivals and things like that, and I would just love that. I mean, it's cool to see hip-hop becoming like this resurgent force in radical politics. Doesn't it feel like
yeah,
it feels like that right now, that people are, you know, even like you see the language being used on like call-outs from all over the country. There are more hip-hop references now than punk.
Ice Cube just made Arrest the President. I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm like, don't tell me this is old Cube. Like, he's been doing these movies and stuff, and like, it would be nice to see more tracks start coming out, even from the mainstream. But yeah, I think things are getting back political. My punk homies, they're getting back to the core of what punk music is, and I think everybody's just like, it's time for the artists to do what we're supposed to do in moments like this. Whenever things resurge and they start getting hot, it's our job to make it hotter. So that maybe we could just finally tear all this shit now.
Right on. Well, especially because like rap music has, people have always said rap music has the power to be this powerful folk music of, you know, because that's what, nowadays kids aren't, you know, playing guitar. They're hanging out on Fruity Loops, or, you know, they got the cracked version of Ableton and making beats on their phone. And
Yeah, my son actually, that sounds like my son, but yeah, both of my sons do music, but the youngest one, he's collaborating and stuff with people in, you know, different parts of the country, just via the internet. So we have the ability to, you know, make all these tracks and not even physically see a person and share it and you know, get it broadcast. So like, we have technology that we didn't have back in the day. So I think that, along with the political climate, I think we're going to start seeing some really, like, vintage shit coming out from the youth, as well as, like, some of the OGs who have been doing it for a while. It's just so easy to do now and to collaborate. You don't need a big-ass studio. You could be in your bedroom making the next, you know, protest song.
Yeah, or you can just be on the bus making the next protest song just in your
True.
Headphones.
True.
That's awesome. How old are your kids?
My youngest is 19. My oldest son is 22.
Damn. That's
yeah, and he's a Richmond punk. I don't want to give out too much of his info, just in case some of the rabble rousers in Richmond want at my son. But he's doing similar things that I'm doing as far as organizing through music, but just doing it for the youth and getting all the youth together. And I'm loving it. Like, I was getting a bit like you say, jaded. And now I'm just like, okay, they haven't forgotten the roots. They haven't forgotten how powerful art can be as a medium. And so it's exciting to watch him and my youngest son do their thing. I feel good about that. Not enough to retire for myself, though. I got a lot of bars to spit. Forget that.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's like people are always like, because I just had a kid like a year and a half who was like, oh, your son's going to be a little rapper. I was like, fuck, I hope not, you know? And then, like,
right,
and then after, you know, just naturally, because he's around music all the time, he just always wants to play keyboard, and he's always,
yeah,
you know, drumming on shit, and like, it seems like he's even trying to rap. And I'm just like, all right, well, I guess I can't protect him from this either.
Nope. I never tried to push it on them either, but you know, like, you'll see when he gets older, he's going to get that head nod, and it's like, oh, it's a rap. Like, it's going to be hard for him to stay away from anything musical. If you're doing music all the time, like, they it's like naturally something that they're going to pick up. So, but I wasn't a guitar player, and my oldest, he does like bass and electric, and, you know, now he's just like making electronic music on the keyboard. So those aren't even skills that I had. I was pretty much just a writer and a poet, and the youngest is a producer, and that's something else that I wish I could make beats. I would like to take it to that level X, you know, producing and making tracks, but they got that shit on lock.
That's awesome. That's beautiful. Yeah, I don't know. For me, I love making beats just because sometimes it's nice to not have to come up with words, you know?
What are you telling, man? I'm behind right now on an album. Like, I don't even want to think about it.
Shit. Well, you know, you gotta, you know, I don't know. I used to think like you only, you know, you should only write when you're inspired, but then sometimes it's like, you know, you have to have a little discipline and, you know, I don't know, just sit down and write bullshit for 20 minutes and then it like,
I know. And so it's a thin line between it. Like, I'll sit back for a bit if I feel like I'm just like, okay, I don't like any of these bars. Like, you're literally just rhyming words. Like, stop. But lately I've been, you know, stepping back, coming back to it, stepping back, coming back to it. I'm a master at, like, taking one rhyme and then mixing it with another one that I wrote. And it's like, okay, this sounds better together. You know, whatever I got to do to get the track together. But you're right. Like, when it's inspired, it's like, damn, I wrote this. It's like, I don't remember writing this. This is incredible. So, yeah.
That's great. I was watching the interview with you on, what is it, Academics in Cars?
Yeah, I mix what I like. My man Jared Ball, kind of a hip-hop academic, a professor, but he's a hip-hopper. I love that.
Yeah, that, it was a cool, I mean, it was like I was just trying to get some more backstory on you. And so it's cool watching that because I... You know, you're part of, you know, you were involved with the Zulu Nation and then later with Guerrilla Republic, which I don't know much about Guerrilla Republic. So I guess, can we start by talking about, like, your relationship with hip hop, you know, throughout your life? Like, what?
Word. Like I said in that interview, I'm coming from Virginia, like Hampton Roads area, 757. It's pretty much a military town, so we had a lot of influences, was pretty much a 90s, you know, type of backpack, cypher kid, you know, going to all the jams.
Mad and, skills.
Proving myself on the mic. And, no, can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah. I was just saying, Mad, shout out Mad Skills.
Word up. Like, that whole scene So, we really had good artists from that area all the way to Richmond. And so it was like you really had to, like, prove yourself. So coming up in that era, I wasn't a part of Zulu Nation, but it wasn't until, like, later on that I got linked up. But I was always influenced by all the elements of hip-hop. I tried to do a little B-girl and tried to do a little graffiti, just interested in the whole culture of it. It wasn't anything that I had to embrace. It pretty much, that was all that was around me at that time was hip hop. So I eventually did start, you know, collaborating with all these really dope artists. And I got linked up with some cats in the UK, actually. Endemic does a lot of stuff with a lot of woo artists, a lot of cats from Boot Camp Click. And so I got on this particular mixtape called Terminal Illness, and it had like Sean P, and rest in peace to Sean P, but just like some juggernauts. And so I was very honored that I got like two tracks up there. And mainly it was through like a Wu-Tang site where we had did like some collaboration for the official Wu-Tang site. That I met up with like all these producers from like Belgium and like I said, UK, and I think a Romanian producer. And like I said, not meeting these cats, but just doing it through the internet and being able to have some collaborations, you know, floating around over in Europe, working on my stage show here, just, you know, representing on the East Coast, linked up with Zulu Nation. That fell apart because of, you know, lots of controversy with Afrika Bambaataa. I just got to keep it real. We're not down with that. And then eventually linked up with Gorilla Republic, which I first found out about through seeing it on Immortal Techniques shirts. And I was like, what is this Gorilla Republic? Is this just, you know, something that it's a label or? And it's pretty much just a crew of international hip hoppers around the globe in the spirit of the Haitian Revolution. As far as that being like the first maroon or guerrilla like community revolution coming out of, you know, slavery and creating their own, you know, reality. And so that's pretty much what Guerrilla Republic is modeled after. And they have a clothing line as well as principles and things that we do and uphold and uplift to spread like radical hip hop, radical culture, community organizing. So the bulk of my work has been in between having jams and parties and things for community and giving back at the same time. So from the very early days, I guess I could just say I've just always been into hip hop activism.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Right. Yeah. For me, it's always been like the activism. I mean, until the last decade, really. But for my, like, you know, the early 2000s, politics were really divorced from what I was doing. At least there wasn't any praxis there. I might have been talking about stuff, but it would kind of like, it was going over people's heads, you know?
So. Yeah, yeah. And they're like, what are you talking about? Why is it so heavy?
Yeah, yeah. This is depressing.
Just write some dope rhymes, man.
Stick
especially
to your
like
feelings.
2000, that like hardcore and hardcore was like really, you know, hardcore lyrics and battle rhyming was really a thing at that time. So, you know, they want you to sound like you're in the Rap Olympics or something, you know. back in like early 2000, it was like that.
Yeah, totally.
But you're right, it wasn't as political. It was starting to fade down. People like Mos Def and Talib Kweli and that whole Raucous era and, you know, Jedi Mind Tricks, I was still heavily into them. So I was still, you know, getting my fix of a political. But I grew up in a community that was like connected to the Black Panthers and other groups like that. So I always saw them use music as a way to reach the people. So it was kind of a natural thing to combine music and organizing for myself. It was just, that was just how the neighborhood was moving. I mean, at least until crack kind of fucked all that up. Thank you, Ronald Reagan.
that was something you talked about in your interview with Jay Ball. Is that his name? Jared Ball?
Jared Ball, yeah, yeah.
Was like your elders being like linked to H was it H-Rap Brown or Stokely Carmichael?
Yeah, yeah, Jamil Alameen, H-Rap Brown, yeah. The community that I was in, I grew up in an Islamic community, black and brown Muslims, but very, very radical. Most of them had came out of the 60s and 70s, you know, and 80s radical movements. And the mosque that I was connected to was a part of just a broad connected mosque up and down the East Coast and into the Midwest, that was pretty much had allegiance to Jamil Alameen and his teachings. And we modeled our community programs. We kind of had community patrol of police early, meaning that fuck the police, don't come in our community. That was our community patrol of police. Don't come here. But we patrolled our own communities, and we made sure our elders felt comfortable and safe to, you know, go out to the stores. And we made sure that the kids were all right. Nobody's coming through and, you know, selling drugs around them or, you know, all the things that were going on around in our community in Norfolk. At that time, I was in Park Place in Norfolk, Virginia. It's just, you know, like any downtown area in a city, you know, it's going to be a lot of things around. And so we pretty much took care of our own community and made sure that everyone was safe, not just Muslims, but everyone. It was quite often we had many denominations, people who were religious or not, would just hang out with us and chill and build with us. People would come to get, you know, healing from, you know, drug addiction and things like this. We would go visit prisons and, you know, give books and toiletries and things like that. So it was just, since I've been doing that since a young age, it's been a part of my makeup. Even now as an adult, I still carry that with me to the work that I do now with Maroon House.
That's amazing. This is the 90s?
Yeah, this was early 90s. I left the country a little while. I stayed in Cairo, Egypt for like 2 years, really just to get the fuck away from the United States, man. It's just like growing up in the hood. It's like I know that there's more to the world than this. And I was like, I need to go to like a major hub so that I can see people and meet people from all over. And I was like, well, at the time, it was like this was before 9/11. So it was still kind of easy to, you know, travel to certain places. So we ended up picking Cairo, and that was one of the most incredible moments for me. And they were bumping hip hop so hard. I was not ready for that. they were like playing Biggie and Pac and Busta Rhymes. And I was just like, what? Cause I had this perception that it was a bit more like religious, you know, and that they wouldn't be able to, you know, have as much secular music out. But not only were they playing like hip hop, but the Egyptian music was, it banged. That music is so good. Yeah, but other than that, just mainly been on this East Coast. Most of my influences have been on the East Coast, music-wise and movement-wise. But our work travels. And so to see it in Cairo and Egyptians, like knowing line for line, some of the same stuff that we were rapping about and stuff in the States, it was beautiful.
That's crazy. I've always wanted to go to fucking Cairo. But and again, it was like we lived in Barcelona in like 2003, and it was after 9/11, right. And I was just shook. I didn't want to go to Morocco. I didn't want to go to Tunisia, and I was like, I really regret it. I just thought I was going to get kidnapped. And
well, I'm not even going to lie. I won't front. I won't lie. There was a kidnapping. I'm not even lying. Like it was at the pyramid. Not, we weren't there, but it was while we were living there. And there was a kidnapping. I think they kidnapped like a bunch of Europeans at the pyramids. And so this was like during Hosni Mubarak, I think was the dictator at the time. And it was interesting. Like, I'm not going to say it wasn't like freedom and liberty for Cairo at that time. They were dealing with a dictator. But it wasn't what it is now. It was so much more free. It was so much easier to travel there. And even with that going on, that was kind of what was to come. I think that was a precursor of what's going on now. I wouldn't go back right at this moment to Cairo, but I really do want to go back because it was amazing. And I got to meet Africans and Europeans from all over who, you know, I mean, it was a big hub there. There was so many universities there and all the museums, and the history is so rich. So many cultures connected in Egypt that it's a great place to go. I just would like it to once again be a place where people can to get that knowledge, man. It's fucked up how the political situation is right now.
That's crazy. Do you know Mike Crenshaw? Do you know this guy?
He was in the documentary. I have not met him, but I was very much familiar with his work. So it's awesome that he was in. He was a part of the Submedia documentary. Just another person like holding it down for hip hop activism. Always been a role model. Yeah,
he's fucking brilliant, and he does these like hip hop caravan things through Africa. So,
word.
You know, maybe he's word. A good person.
Might have to link up with Mike, yeah.
Yeah, no, for real. Because, I mean, if you
bought... yeah, I would love to go and perform in all the countries of Africa. I swear, like, that would be, like, a dream come true. We're trying to link up with some cats in Cuba and other places and, you know, just build each other up, lift each other up, get exposure to artists who might not, you know, be as connected globally. We're working on it. If I can't get to Cuba, maybe Brazil. But I'm working on that.
Yeah, it's again, it's like when I talk to people, I'm like, man, I've only been to these white ass places. Like, when, how am I gonna, you know, how am I gonna build with folks in Central and South America and
kind of
see some other shit? And it's like, it's tough because
their
language
music
barriers.
Is so powerful, man. Like, they got that fire. Like, I mean, and it's very political. It seems like the further you get out of the U.S., the music is so damn political.
Yeah, capitalism.
Capitalism, man. Fuck it.
Get money. Hey, so how did you... So you are you still a Muslim?
I'm not, actually. Around, let me see, about maybe 10, 13 years ago, I started really getting into Buddhist studies, and I'm pretty much a Buddhist, pretty much practicing for, like I said, about past 10, 13 years. More so, there is no real God figure in Buddhism. It's more of an agnostic, non-theistic type of a faith, and it really is about, hey, get your shit together. This is an illusion. I think Buddha was an anti-capitalist for real. It's like, all this glittery shit's not real. Get your own shit in order. So I love the fact that it's about, like, you know, taking care of your ego and just checking yourself and realizing that you're connected to other people and it's not all about you. Like, it really helped me. Not that I had a big ego, but we all have one. So, and living in the U.S., like, it doesn't promote cooperative, collective, communal living. It's just like we're in a jungle, you know, or whether it's an urban jungle or whatever, just like go at each other. So Buddhism really calmed me down and helped me see things in a different perspective. But I study a lot of things wherever I can get, you know, any type of spiritual comfort. I study things, African spirituality like Yoruba, things of that nature, native shamanism, because I have indigenous roots that I don't know enough about, thanks to America. So I'm just pretty open, and I don't like people to force their dogma on me, but I'm open to, you know, talking to people about things that make them better people. If it makes you a better person, go for it. You know, if it makes you a religious fanatic foaming at the mouth, I'll stay away from that. I'm not interested in that.
Right on. It's funny because you know, people have been telling me I should meditate for like my whole life because I'm just uptight or whatever, aggressive, and so I don't know. I started like meditating a little bit, and it really helped clear some of the cobwebs out of my head. One of my homies was like, you know, he was challenging me on anarchist organizing, and he's like, because he's like a former anarchist who's now a Buddhist. And he was
and he's funny.
And because he was like, he's like, well, you know, once you like realize like the, his thing is like basically like once you realize like that the ego is bullshit, he has a real hot take on like why he can't be an anarchist anymore, but whatever.
Yeah.
But he basically says, you know, if you want to, he's like, you say like at best your activism eliminates suffering. He's like, you really want to eliminate suffering? Go teach everybody to fucking meditate. I'm down with that part.
Like, I'm not an ex-anarchist, but I'm down with that. Like, I really do. Like, I honestly, like, I think about like in the hoods and stuff like that. Like, everybody's stressed out, high blood pressure, hypertension, just not feeling good because of the day-to-day rat race. And they call it mindfulness now. Like, they've taken all the spirituality out of it and they've created these programs and stuff. Mainly white people. Like, they took the Buddhism out of the Buddhism and they've just taken the core principle of mindfulness. But even if you just have to practice mindfulness practices where you're just thinking about disconnecting and then reconnecting, like, it really does. Like, at first I couldn't sit down for shit. I was like, how am I supposed to not hear these sirens going off? And what's that delicious smell? I couldn't concentrate at all. I was so mad at myself. Like, what's wrong with me? And, you know, with a little practice, like, I can literally sit in the middle of, like, a loud-ass concert now. I remember doing Occupy. I would try it out. It would be, like, you know, tear gas everywhere and cops, and it got kind of wild. And I would learn to just meditate in the middle of that and, like, you know, get my core center back and be at peace. And I was like, if I could do this in the middle of Occupy with all kinds of dogs and shit running around, I think anybody could do it. And it could help us out just to chill out and be able to think a little bit clearer, you know?
Right on. And, you know, meditation can mean different things to different people. Like, to some people, that's just like taking a walk. You know, they say,
yeah, walking meditation, there's lying meditation. Like, it doesn't have to be you're sitting in the lotus position, like, you know, all dramatic. I mean, unless you want to, but you don't have to. You could totally just walk and notice everything about you and just slowly breathe and get, you know, that breath control. It helps, man, because it's stressful out here. Nobody wants to be on pharmaceuticals and all these drugs and shit that they have us on. So we got to find some kind of way to cope.
Yeah, I mean, I usually take a bath, you know, that's like my thing. Every 3 days I'll read and take a bath.
So
you come from this, you know, internationalist kind of Pan-African Black Panther community defense roots. How did you come to anarchism?
That's interesting. In the midst of all of that, I'm a crazy, just read. I read a lot. And I don't know how or when I stumbled across, I feel like it was some Emma Goldman, some Kropotkin, and maybe some Lucy Parsons stuff. And I was like, oh my God, this shit makes sense. And like, it was one of those epiphany things. For long, I didn't really know. It's like, what am I? Am I a Pan-African socialist, African internationalist? What the hell am I? A Marxist? Am I? When I read, you know, the different writings and saw them doing mutual aid and how they work together, and often had, and this is no slight to communists, but, you know, had communists going against them, even though it seemed like they had very, very common goals. And I understood that, you know, in the field working and seeing how people are so sectarian and as we say in the hood, set tripping for no reason, just off of ideology. It felt like anarchism was something that was closer to the way I viewed the world, the relation of work and money and the state. It just felt free. And then through anarchism, I learned more about, well, you know, this is just what the Maroons and indigenous people, you know, without that name, were doing. You know, the Maroons that escaped and created colonies and collective, you know, work in the middle of oppression, you know, whether they were in the mountains, the jungles, the woods, wherever they went. Like, I'm from Virginia, and the Maroons went from Virginia all the way up into North Carolina, basically with the native population resisting. But living, not just resisting, but living and holding each other up and creating this incredible thing. And I was upset that I didn't learn about this really in school. I had to learn about it as an adult. I had to learn about anarchism as an adult. And it just fit for me as far as my lifestyle and where I was. This, you know, and I had been in organizations that were socialist, and I still love my comrades, but I think I view things a bit different than they do when it comes to hierarchy and authority. So that's kind of how I stumbled into it. And during Occupy, it just increased even more because a lot of the comrades that were out there, they were anarchists, and we would have these really long conversations you know, about what we wanted the fucking world to look like. Like, we weren't just out there because it was the cool thing to do. Like, we really wanted shit to change. And we told people everything that's happening right now was about to happen. And, like, everybody just looked at us and said, go take a bath.
Right, go get a job.
You know, so... Yeah, so I mean that's pretty much how, though, just reading material and linking up with comrades, seeing them living collectively, building mutual aid during Occupy Sandy, to see these kids go out and like deface horrible situations that even the government didn't want to go, you know, walking up flights and flights of stairs, feeding people and making sure elders had heat because there was no electricity, like. Seeing regular people do shit like that, it really affected me.
Yeah, totally. And it's also like, you know, I also like the take on anarchism that it's like these are, you know, these are practices that, you know, some people in books call this anarchism, but, you know, yeah. People have been living like that for thousands of years, and it's
exactly.
Like the natural state of things.
Yeah. People want to cooperate. Like, we're taught to not cooperate. The stuff that I was reading is, like, really, it made me realize how we start off from kids oppressed, man. Like, it made me change as a teacher because I was a teacher. It made me change my parenting. It changed. It made me question myself. Like, where do you lie in this global oppression where, you know, people have different privileges and things of this nature? Where are you at on the spectrum? What the fuck can you do different? Yeah, I know what the politicians and the corporations can do different, but what the hell can I do different? How can I do this differently so that it's not oppressive, so that I'm not oppressing the youth, my family, my neighborhood, and you know, so like you said, like, people have been looking to do that from villages and huts, and, you know, early Europe was definitely working together, you know, if they weren't chopping each other up, you know,
right.
These ridiculous wars that they kept having. But, you know, you look at the early European communities, like, that was village life all day long. Early Middle Eastern communities, village life, Africa, village life, Central America, it was village concepts and coming to a consensus and deciding what to do together. I don't know why we need these fucking politicians, you know, like, we can handle it ourselves. So I'm trying to get more people to look at it that way and not from the scary, it's just so much propaganda against anarchists, man. It's awful.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like, it's interesting to me because, you know, you talk about like the Reagan era and like how that like destroyed communities, you know, and if you look at like, Hip hop is like libertarian capitalist as it gets, you know.
Yeah.
It's like right wing, like, doesn't matter. I don't care if you say in fuck Trump, like, chances are at the end of the day you're a fucking Ron Paul libertarian,
yeah.
You know, rapper. And like, it seems to me that like not to like say you're not an individual or anything, but like, I think like having that sort of deep community based around like self-defense and radical politics like helped you go in this direction. But I just wonder, like, you know, why is it, you know, that in so many other places it's like everybody's like, fuck that shit, I gotta get mine, you know, like,
because capitalism is a motherfucker. And like, I totally understand it, man. I grew up in the hood, and at one point as a youth, I had that attitude too. Like, why am I in a house with roaches? You know, why don't we have enough food? Why does my grandmother work her whole life and you know, you don't have shit? And even at that age, I already understood the whys, you know, how America got its wealth, how it got so damn wealthy, and how it kept its wealth by keeping people poor and frustrated and marginalized and imprisoned and enslaved. And I get it. Like, when you're growing up in that and these shiny things are flashed in front of your face, like, one of my homeboys used to always say, we're just in a quest for shiny shit. And it's true. When you're around everything that's not shiny and it's dirty and it's broken and there's no heat in your school and, you know, shit's just depressing. And so, yeah, like, it gets to the point where it's just like, I'm going to get mine and I'm not going to live like this however I have to. So we went from saying, you know, like Malcolm saying, by any means necessary to get free, to being by any means necessary to not be in this fucking poverty. If that's all we're going to get is just poor and not poor, I'd rather be not poor. And so that's really what it is. It's the conditioning of this society, you know, that makes people, it makes hip hop who, you know, is the community that's at the bottom. Because like, you know, like I said in the documentary, 1973, South Bronx, man, that looks like Beirut used to look, you know, or Palestine right now, just completely destroyed. And even also where I live in Baltimore, where there's just all these dilapidated, crumbling buildings and nobody gives a fuck. That's what hip hop came out of. So it's been trying to find some kind of an economic base, some way to not suffer ever since the beginning of hip hop. I understand it. I just wish that we could radicalize these youth so that they don't feel that that's all there is just getting money and that's it. Because once you get it, that's not going to make it better either. You know, we're living under this system. And even when you have money, these rich people aren't happy at all because they're empty as shit on the inside.
Totally.
Their whole quest. And now that they have it, they're just empty.
Totally. So,
yeah. We just need to radicalize the youth, man. Make this revolution, you know, interesting to them, enticing, tangible, touchable. Because it just seems like some old books, you know, they see the Black Panthers or Weather Underground. It's like, oh, that's cool. The 60s was cool, but what does that have to do with me right now with all these opioids in my community or with white supremacists running rampant and fucking shit up, you know? When they see anarchists, with all due respect, it's some coffee shop kids. Like, I live here in D.C., and I know a lot of the anarchists here. Some of them are really about that life. Some of them are posers, but you wouldn't know that because everything is through the internet now. And so as long as your site looks good and you promote yourself, people have no idea how shallow you are, how much you really don't hang out with Black and brown people, how much you really don't do mutual aid, how you beat your girlfriend. Like, they don't know these things, but they'll just see some white kids come to a protest, not talking to the youth. I wish more people would get off of that pedestal and just come down and be real and kick it to them. Like, you don't have to use the terms that Marx and other people and Engels said to break it down about why we're poor and why we need to, you know, rebel against a system that pretty much leeches off of us. You know, like, we could use more terms that break it down and make it seem, you know, it just seems like such an academic thing sometimes when you talk to anarchists or socialists or communists, Marxists, like, it's above the head of the regular everyday people. So there's a disconnect there that we got to get out these books and get a little bit more real, you know?
Yeah, like, you know, Black people, whatever, people of color don't need to have their oppression explained to them, you know?
Not at all. Like, we get it. It's like, oh, yeah, we get that part, but what the fuck are we going to do about it? And don't give me this big long term lumping proletariat and all these other things, like, you know, just kick it and just be like a regular person relating to each other. Like, we all can relate to rent being high, too many bills, running out of space, feeling isolated and disconnected. And if we could just get to the core of those things, you know, I think we would have hella more anarchists, seriously. And they might not even use that term, but they're down with the principles, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I would, like, I ran, like, a text loop, so I could send out a text and get away from social media, and, like, we had, like, I don't know, 500 people on this text loop, and we could, like, mobilize someone at the district attorney's house in, you know, an hour, you know, and, like, oh, people are getting out of jail, come here. And so what I would do is I would go to every Black Lives Matter thing, every, you know, Keystone XL thing or anything where there would be people of color, and I would just make it a point to give, you know, to talk to people, give them this flyer, and, like, you know, sometimes it is awkward because people are like, why is this white boy trying to evangelize me, like, what does he want, you know? Oh, you know what I mean? It's like there's all these, like, weird things, because I don't know, in Denver activism was really segregated, you know, and I would say it still is. And it's really, I had a hard time overcoming that. I mean, I definitely, you know, had some solid comrades of color. Denver's very white now, whiter than ever. But it's, you know, it's like, you know, as like a white dude trying to like, you know, be a good, I don't like the term ally, but trying to like
accomplice.
Yeah, being a good accomplice. Yeah. And like, but I, you know what, honestly, like I will white ally for some real shit, you know what I mean?
No,
I don't give a fuck.
We need y'all to do certain things, like, okay. And it's like, you know what it is, like, okay, you know, you can get in this door and you can say this, you can do that. I need you to be that ally right now. I need
right.
you to talk to this person because we can't do it. Like, that shit comes in handy, like, really, it does.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like, you know, navigating that nuance, but, you know, it's just like the mistrust, you know, it's like yeah. how do we overcome that mistrust between anarchists yeah. and communities of color? Do you have, like, any real ideas about how we do
My
that?
My thing is, because a lot of comrades keep asking me, like, they just get over the awkwardness part of it, yeah, you know. Okay, we might not have grown up in the same communities, but again, beyond all that, we're all fucking suffering under capitalism. So once when you cut off all that fat and just get right to the meat of things and keep it simple, and like you said, be there, show up. Like we're less likely to trust people when we don't see you, because there's a lot of activism right now and a lot of people popping up on the scene, and then you never see these people again. I wasn't even here for J20. I was in a black community in Newark. Even though I live in D.C. and also Baltimore, I wasn't here. But what I did was I was texting to lawyers because I knew the parks and everything that they were in, especially Franklin Park. We had just fed people in that park. And, you know, I was sending texts to comrades. I'm like, look, when you come here and fuck shit up, that's cool, but make sure you don't fuck up where the homeless people are. Make sure you don't fuck up where the elders are going to have to be. You know, or maybe bring some food. Maybe leave your Metro cards. Like, you've got to engage with the communities other than just for protests. Like, you've got to engage with them on a regular basis. And I know a lot of the people doing J20, they weren't from here. But for the comrades who are here, like, we got to see you on a regular basis to be able to trust you. Because a lot of people exploit our communities, and then we never hear from them again. And so to break that mistrust, we just got to see you. You got to be around. And people, they'll start to let their guard down if they feel that you're sincere. Oh, he was out here when we were cleaning up the community. Oh, there's Jonathan. What's up, Jonathan? You know, we embrace people if we feel like they're real. If we feel like they're bullshitting us, it's like, nah, get out of here. So, I think more white anarchists just need to kick it and don't be afraid to organize with you know, black anarchists or black socialists or whatever, anti-capitalists. And if dare I say, follow their lead, follow their example. Like, we're not going to lead you. We're not going to bring a comrade out so they can go somewhere and get jumped and fucked up. Like, you know, it's not all bad in the hood, you know. And I'm talking about the hood because that's an area that doesn't get organized enough with this type of organizing. But you know, take the lead from your brothers and sisters and comrades who are, you know, this is where they live at, this is their community. And I think it will be okay. We're just afraid. Even us, we're afraid of each other because of all the social taboos, because of all this created race shit, which is a fiction. You know, it's not even real. There's no such thing as race.
Right.
It was like, who was closer to the equator? Like it's literally just pigmentation. Like, who the hell cares? Culture is real. Ethnicity is real. I'm not saying to wipe out that, but race is not real. And once we get over that shit, we're all dealing with the same problems and different skills. So I just tell people, come around. Like, I try to get people to come to the space. Once they're here, we can build and do a lot of things together. And there are other spaces. Like, go to their spaces and just build with them. We're always looking for people who are sincere to just come and kick it, you know?
Because even if it seems like it's going to be some liberal-ass shit, if it's the only yeah. thing going on, chances are there are other radicals on the or potential allies along the peripheries who
oh, yeah.
will be there in the back thinking, you know what, this preacher is full of shit, you know,
mm-hmm.
and like, those are the people who, you know, y'all see each other, you make eye contact, you know, exchange flyers or whatever, you know, and like you say, just showing up. And so it's a reason to, if we really want to build these, like, you know, movements for collective liberation, you know,
yeah.
it's a just showing up.
that's what the weather and the weathermen and, you know, like Weather Underground and shit, like, think about it. Black Liberation Army and Weather Underground were riding hard together. You got people like Marilyn Buck and David Gilbert and all of them, like, really doing their thing with the Black Liberation Army. And that's not just, you know, that just doesn't happen overnight. Those comrades had to, you know, step off a platform, humble themselves and just be regular folks, like not coming with all that big jargon, but just being real humble. You know, I'm sure they were like smoking J's and eating and, you know, enjoying the music of their era, the culture of their era, and, you know, talking about how fucked things were. And they just built natural alliances. Like, if we're on the same page, it's not that hard, but we have to get over not even being in each other's presence and not even seeing each other at all, except bumping into each other at these events. Like, we got to break bread and chill. And a lot of the elder comrades that I have now who are white, like, these are some of the most radical people that I know. And they go in and out of Black and brown communities so easily and effortlessly because they're not there to pose. They're not there to preach. Like you said, they're not trying to break down what it means to be Native or what it means to be Black. They're just there like, all right, what you need me to do? That's it. And I'm telling you, that shit is, when it's genuine, yeah, that's some real stuff. And it confuses the elite. Because they thought that they laid all these seeds for us to just hate each other. And when we don't and we're working in unison, that's why they were so fearful of the left in the 70s and the 60s. They were fearful as shit because we were all coming together, Black, brown, white, Native. It scared the shit out of them. And it rocked this country. Like, it hasn't been rocked like that in a very long time. And I think we're getting to that point again. Like, it's time for everybody to, like, rock this country, man. Like, when we all come together, it terrifies the powers that be. I'm so down. If it has to be hip-hop, then fuck it, let's do it.
Well, you know, and especially, like, you know, in the hood, because, you know, like, my homie Brenda would always say, like, I'm done with these fucking white liberals. Like, you know, she's an indigenous woman, and she'd be like, let's organize where the real people are, you know, in the neighborhoods. And yeah. and it's pretty impactful, you know, because the cops think that they can do anything that they want to people.
Yep.
From those places. And, like, just showing a little bit of solidarity in those moments is powerful, because, A, like, liberal NGOs of color typically won't, and at least in Denver, wouldn't fuck with, like, for instance, like, if someone is in jail bleeding out with a criminal record, they might not do anything. But, like, that's a place where, like, anti-authoritarians can step in and say, hey, look, we don't give a fuck. We know if you had to sell drugs to survive, we know why. We don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like, we might never
had the NAACP do jail watch. there might be some chapters that do, but, you know, like, that would be like the more hardcore radical folks. And I had a lot of white comrades doing that work. And not only just that, like, the prison work, the prison abolition work, especially, like, a lot of my comrades in Philly and New York, man, they are on that shit. And I hate to say, why can't you be like them? Like, but, you know, like, these are, like, some John Brown-ass, you know, white people who are really, first off, they had to step off the pedestal of white privilege. You know, and it's hard because people are going to put that on you even if you don't want it. It's like, I don't want this shit. It's like, well, we're going to give it to you anyway. But they found a way to weaponize it. It's like, okay, well, if you're going to give us all this privilege that we really could care less about, we're going to use it for the betterment of everybody. Like you said, like, being a real accomplice. And we're just going to, you know, do what we need to do. But never to step on anyone's foot or overspeak them or take their thoughts and paraphrase it. Like, Black and brown people have had that happen too much. It's like, oh, not you too. You know, so, you know, that shit hurts. It's like, come on, I thought you were my homie. You wrote a whole book using my words. So, you know, shit like that. But, It's a ripe fucking time right now. And I want to see the white comrades not just link up with us, man. You better go out in rural America and these damn suburbs and stop these kids from these damn white supremacist chat rooms and walking around, you know, with Pepe Frog shit and throwing up the OK symbols. And, like, young white kids are getting radicalized, but in the wrong way. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. I remember the 90s. we had to do a lot of fighting of skinheads and shit like that. And I don't want to see it get to that point where people are getting curb stomped again. You know, we all watched American History X and we were like, fuck yeah, where the white boys like that at? Yeah. Like, that was our movie. And we wanted to see more cats like out there, like pulling cats out of this hate shit and showing that we're all just fucking people. So we need the comrades to get up on that too, because it's scary seeing how angry a lot of these young white men are. And people are feeding into that and giving them this is, I don't know, man. Like, I don't even know why it's enticing to them. I guess they want to feel powerful, but it's scary to see the mass murders, the attacks. I think another black woman just got a hate crime the other day in New York on the subway, and they stabbed her. They punched her in her face, and they stabbed her. Her lungs collapsed. Like, this shit is happening all the time now, and it's scary to the elders. It's scary to the youth, because we had that little phase when Obama was president, and people thought, oh, well, surely this means America's getting over this shit. No, he was a capitalist murderer who deported like 2.5 million people. And, you know, they didn't have the right analysis for that. But you could see the Tea Party and all those people bubbling up while Obama was president. I knew this shit was about to blow up and like this. I knew it. And a lot of us knew it. That shit's got to be countered just as much as, you know, working in conjunction with black and brown people. So, yeah, we got a lot of work to do.
Shit, I have a lot. I just moved to semi-rural Maine, and I'm like, fuck. Ooh, listening to you talk, there I'm like, oh no, I have to fucking deal with these white people.
But hey, like, look, like Fred Hampton got with the, I forgot their names. I hate that. I think it was the Young Patriots. They were like Appalachian, like radical white dudes, and just as rural as they could possibly be. And I don't know how Fred Hampton hooked up with those dudes, but they were radical as fuck. And you know, it's possible. You know, it's possible that might actually be the best place, because it's away from the city and you got land, you can farm, you know.
We can shoot right up. We can shoot guns right off my porch. Yeah. Shoot guns right off my porch.
Exactly. Like, I can't do that shit in D.C. It would be so many cops there. You know what I'm saying? You shoot off one shot and it's going to be like 50 different agencies, you know, at your door. So, like, places like, and where I'm from Virginia, but not the rural part, like Appalachia and all those stuff. Like, they need people to organize them. Like, they're not getting, they're getting the Trumpism, but they're not getting, you know, any radical shit. And so, yeah, man, we gotta counter that shit.
Seen a whole lot of people want bands. Seen a whole lot of people can't get what they want, so a whole lot of people pop dance. They say the means don't justify the ends. Did the ends ever justify the means? And will we end all of this hardship if we just put rich figures in the guillotine? Really? Oh, cigar rolls blows on the war field. Whole world torn, but I'm more chill. Told the doc I don't need more pills. I need more Skrilla, not more bills. And that ain't even me trying to get fly. That's just really me trying to get by. Everybody want to live a good life. Even when we caught up in the hood, right? Some be bopping like it's slow-mo. Some be mobbing with the fofo. Some be sit and try to meditate. Some don't walk cause they levitate. Some don't hawk, just elevate. Some don't talk cause they hella fake. Some don't stop but still ever shine. Play the back when in the moon time. Fade to black then it's goon time. Blaze the track and it's a new rhyme. You got passion, it's in due time. Same glasses with some new wine. You've been asking but you do know. Without actions how can you grow? I see you pushing out the concrete. Did you ever know your roots, RD? I'm so proud of myself, it's just how I feel. I do my dance all in the mirror because I am real. And everybody want the negative, I wanna chill. All of this shit that I've been through, that turned me to steel. And I'm so focused right now, we're playing no games. I have been through all the sorrow and tasted the pain.
Enemies trying to stop me, I won't say their names. I won't give them the fame. I put two in their frame. Seen a whole lot of people want friends. Seen a whole lot of people want bands. Seen a whole lot of people can't get.
Do you grow?
I tried to grow a little bit. It's funny because we just had a long conversation about this yesterday. We have a community garden in the back, so we're dabbling in some veggies and stuff. But you're allowed to grow several plants and have, you know, some budding here in D.C. as part of the legalization process. And I grew a blueberry strain. It didn't get to bud, though, because I went out of town and the homies didn't water it, so, you know, shit like that. But it got pretty big, and it was right at the point where it was about to go into the flowering part. So I think we're going to dabble in it again and just to see what we can do as we're growing food, you know, grow that. Because it is, beyond the recreational part, like, it's serious. It's helping a lot of people. And in Virginia, D.C., Baltimore, there's just a really bad opioid crisis going on. And I think if more people could grow or consume, you know, cannabis without the bullshit, you know, stigma or whatever, drug testing your job or whatever, I think it would help so many more people. So we have growers that teach classes and stuff here, and we've given out free seeds, free clones, lots of cool shit, even equipment to get people to be growers. So we're just trying to spread that movement, like, really hard.
That's awesome. I always quit smoking like every 9 months just to clear my head.
You're one of those.
But when I moved out here, I was like, I'm not going to grow. And then my brother-in-law brought over a plant, and I was like, all right, I'll just throw it in the ground and not going
to
fucking.
I mean, it does its own. I mean, like, it's such an easy plant to grow. And that's the thing. Like, once you find out how easy it is to grow weed, it's like, really? All this time? Like, I got mine out of a Dixie cup and then, you know, had to transfer it and everything to a, you know, proper pot so that the roots would be good. But I was amazed, and I had never grown anything, not even vegetables at that point. So I know if I can do it, anybody can grow.
That's what they call it, weed. It grows like
a
weed.
It's own thing.
Yeah, my favorite thing about growing is taking the trimmings and making like an oil, you know, and like mixing that in tea.
A little can of butter.
Love it.
Yeah, that's great. You can cook with it, and pretty much anything's infused after that.
Yeah, I mean, basically, like, that's how I fall asleep at night. I just take a spoonful of coconut oil, mix it with some tea. No problem.
Yeah, and like I said, it would get so many people off of pharmaceutical pills if they could just have, like you said, a spoonful. I mean, I've seen it stop seizures.
Yeah.
You know, just a couple of drops under the tongue of maybe a tincture. And it's amazing. Like, I don't know anything that works that damn fast. So, I mean, even for animals, it stops seizures in animals. It's definitely something that I'm going to get my hand. I want to be more knowledgeable about herbs. You know, we have this collective house, but eventually the goal is land, you know, to be able to really do the things that we need to do. So I want to be able to dabble in, you know, vegetables and herbs and, you know, just be self-sufficient.
Hell yeah. I'm all about that shit.
Yeah, man.
So, well, I know I'm having a good interview because I've only gotten to ask like two of the questions I've written down. So,
shit happens like that, man.
Well, I always over prepare. I'm like, you know, it's better. I feel like it's better to have more questions and like you only get to ask like the really important ones than like, you know, you get like 40 minutes in, you get a one sentence response to every question, right. And then you're like, oh.
Captain Crunch is my favorite. Next.
Exactly. I wanted to ask you about the Maroon House. Frank Lopez was telling me some stuff about it, and it sounds like a perfect sort of kind of project.
It's awesome. I'm really lucky. So there's a backstory to the Maroon House. Again, like I said, I'm from Virginia. The Great Dismal Swamp is where the Maroon colony was in Virginia, all the way into North Carolina. Again, of liberated, you know, Africans who were, you know, during the slavery era. I hate to say slaves. They were liberated Africans. They liberated themselves. I think Matthew McConaughey had a movie recently. I forgot the name of it, but it did show when he got to the swamp, like he was a deserter, I think, from the Civil War. And when he went to the swamps, there were all these Africans out there living and natives. And those were Maroons. I cannot think of the name of that film.
Free State, right? Free State?
Yeah,
that's exactly I saw that on Netflix. I haven't watched it yet. It's like some.
It's interesting. I mean, it tells too much of his side, but just the fact that they showed that there were not just natives and black people, but there were also white deserters of the Confederacy and all kinds of people trying to just get away and, you know, have their own little, you know, community. So this is an intentional community. When I first got to D.C., I used to stay here in the 90s, but I came back, I think, at the tail end of Occupy movement. I was down with Occupy the Hood myself. But, you know, I was still down with the Occupy movement overall. So I think D.C. was having their 1-year anniversary. You know, I knew it was going to be a good place to kick it with different anarchists and, you know, some of the socialist comrades. And, you know, we can build without worrying about, you know, all the liberal bullshit. And so I think they were doing like some sleepful protests and stuff. And I'm like, if I'm not mistaken, we were occupying outside of the Veterans Department, highlighting the suicides of veterans. And how, like, the military will send you out to, you know, do all this war shit, but they don't care about you when you come back. And quite a few of our activists were, you know, veterans who had turned their back against the war movement. So I linked up with some cats there who were like, yeah, we have a house and, you know, not far from here. I know it's getting cold and maybe you want to eat something, take a shower. So I'm like, okay. I didn't realize that it was going to be so much a hub of, like, just everybody. Some of the cats from Smash Racism DC, I met a lot of them at the time, and a lot of different anarchist groups that were around, and all kinds of just the riffraff that people, you know, frown at, the white people that get frowned at, you know, because they got like locks, or, you know, they're the Burning Man white people, or, you know, whatever, like the ones that people are afraid of. And I was like, yes, these are my kind of white people, you know, like we're talking about going to people's houses and chaining ourselves so people don't get evicted. You know, we're talking about ACAB marches and tagging up graffiti and, you know, going to Gap and rabble rousing there when, you know, people are dying in sweatshops and burning in sweat. I mean, it was just a wonderful group of people who were really passionate. And it was enticing. It was intoxicating. I was like, oh, sign me up. This is nothing like what we have going on in Virginia. I ended up fucking staying, bro. Like, it wasn't even my intention. But I ended up staying at the house. And it was a lot of us. It was connected to the anti-nuclear war vigil that was across from the White House. It's still there. It's been there since, I think, 81. And it's a 24-hour vigil. So people in the house would take times, you know, manning the tent. Handing out information about, you know, anti-nuclear, you know, proliferation, anti-war initiatives, anti-racism. It was just a nice spot right in front of the White House, across from it. And they couldn't do anything about it because it had been, like, grandfathered in. So, you know, in between that and our community organizing, Food Not Bombs and other people would drop in. It was just really dope. We would have open mics and stuff like that. And, you know, I became a part of that space. And as we moved to different spaces, as we had to deal with slumlord and evictions and all kinds of shit, we changed locations once or twice. The particular location that I'm in right now, it was still the Peace House until March when we kind of split. And they still have the Peace House going in another part of Northeast. But this space is more intentional about looking to organize black and brown people at this time right now when we're heavily under attack. So it's black and brown centered as well as queer centered. And it's five comrades. We just all come together and, you know, handle all the utilities and bills of in this nature and open up our space for people to have community events. We have a people's pantry. We have a community garden. We quite frequently cook food or gather food. In our one of the rooms, we turned it into a whole pantry. So it's literally tables with, you know, tampons and pads and shampoos, deodorant, racks of shoes, coats, all gently used. But we're not doing this for a profit like Goodwill. It's just a people's movement. It's just what we should be doing. And it's pretty much patterned after the Black Panther Party and the survival programs. I'm literally taking a page from that because they are my elders. And beyond just H.R.E.P. Brown, other Panthers have been in this space, or I've been in their homes, and they've given me, you know, a lot of advice. And I've ran some, you know, autonomous Panther groups that were not connected to like the new Black Panther Party, but pretty much was running off the principles of the original Panther Party. So the house pretty much runs like a Panther pad would, where they open their doors and just serve the people. It's been amazing. We've had everything from healing sessions to concerts, self-defense classes, you know, holistic herbal, like teaching people herbs, and it's been incredible. In the middle of everything that's going on in D.C. and all the stress and angst, this is a space that people feel good to just live and be and breathe. And they can talk about things that they might not be able to talk about with their more liberal or either conservative families. You can be free here and express yourself. We don't ask that people be anarchists. We just ask that you be anti-capitalist and not a fucking Democrat and Republican flag-waving person, but someone who's open to changing all this shit. And so it's worked out pretty well. It's been a blessing. I don't even know. I don't have the words to say how amazing it is to see people that you don't know and their expression when they come in, where they feel like they're at home. It humbles me every day, even if I don't want to do it sometimes, knowing that people will knock on the door for food and clothing and shit like that. And, you know, I got tired of the marches. I got tired of the, you know, all of that shit that wasn't really affecting anything anyway. I'm not saying don't protest, but sometimes we do that a little bit too much, and we don't organize in our communities, and we don't organize for what we want the world to look like. We're so busy saying what we hate about the world that we don't even make models to show what it could be. And I'm like, well, at least this is a model in the middle of gentrification that we can do something else. And it doesn't have to be that we feel like we're alone. So that's what the Maroon House is about. And yeah, it's been dope. I won't lie, it's been dope.
That's awesome. I mean, it sounds like I guess what I'd say is, like, you know, especially like in light of gentrification, it's like, well, shit, you know, you're directly alleviating the financial burden. Like, if somebody can get tampons, you know, that's $8 they don't have to spend.
Hell yeah. Know? Yeah. Like, and not only that, once we alleviate it, people are taking the idea, not just the item, they're taking the idea. So we just planted a seed in someone's head. Why can't I do this? Like, we took a box and put it in the front and took a magazine rack, painted that shit, like, you know, put the anarchist symbol or something on there and just put books in there. There's a free library. Boom. Here's a free place for clothing, like a clothing chest. Someone stole our chest recently, and I was like, I don't give a fuck. We just buy another one and put it out there. Like, you know, I don't even care. Like, you know, we're not out here to be cute and, oh my God, the community. Like, the community is what it is. It's dog eat dog out here sometimes. And there are also people who don't want to see you succeed. So a box of free clothing that's painted red, black, and green, that might be offensive to maybe some of our new gentrifiers. Maybe they took it. Like, we don't know, but it's not going to stop what we're doing because too many people want to do the same thing after they come here. And if we can get more people to think about communal living, collectives, co-ops, I think we'll be, you know, I mean, to me, that's the best anarchist, example that you can set, is just like really living it for people to see that it's not just smoke bombs and black block, but we can get that on too.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing, it's also like, you know, if we talk about like prefiguration and building the world we want in the shell of the old, it's like, that's what it's going to be, is, you know, 10,000 maroon houses, and then bam, mm-hmm. we don't need the state anymore. We don't need nothing.
Exactly. And so it's what you're doing. Cause that's dope. Like, we want to get to that point where we got a little more land. Like, this city shit is like, it gets so oppressive, man. And to be able to do what we really want to do, we need land. So like, but it, you know, this is it. Like, this is literally the, I think the best way that we can show them, even more than punching Richard Spencer in the face. And I get it, because when they came here, we fucked them up. I'm not ashamed to say it. we got down in the middle of the street, and I did catch a charge and it got dropped. But that's important too, to stop, you know, fascists from, you know, just having genocide conferences right in your community. But it's also important to show that it's not just theory and conversations, and, you know, it's actual living, and it does make your life better. Like, this is so much easier. Do you know how high the rent is in DC? It's astronomical. It's astronomical, and people really cannot afford here, and the homeless population is rising. So, like, people can break it down into five people paying rent in one big house. Hell yeah.
Right on. Yeah, I have homies who like, they bought one property in Denver, and then they are they've like created a trust, and then like with the equity from that house, they're buying another house, which will be for mothers, for single mothers, to have like a collective, you know, new kind of co-live. And then the same land trust takes the equity in that home, buys another one, and you know, that's another model for, I mean, to me, like, that's not scalable fast enough, honestly.
Yeah.
But it's something, you know, like, we gotta try shit. We have to experiment and get our hands dirty. And, I don't know, and I gotta say, it's like, it's not sexy to do that shit, but you make it sound awesome, you know?
Yeah.
Like, feeding people.
If someone had said it to me, I would have been a little skeptical, but like I said, like, I had to stumble into it. And it's kind of similar to how I didn't think about it. Like, when I was growing up in that Jamil Alameen, H-Rap Brown community, we had apartments and schools, and we were doing cooperative, collective things, but it just, no one like broke it down like that. And I thought about it. I was like, man, we've been doing this our whole lives, making sure that, you know, people had clothes and food, and people were sending people to college, like, especially in like immigrant and black communities, putting money together to send maybe the most, you know, promising kid to college, you know, everyone chipping in. That was mutual aid. Or someone had a disaster and everyone chipping in. I mean, like, we didn't learn those terms then, but it's the same thing. And it would be great if it was on a bigger scale and it was just outright land. But until we get that, we got to start somewhere. It's like survival pending revolution. You know, we might not make it to revolution in our lifetime. It might be the next generation, but give them something to have as a model for after the revolution, man. What is that going to look like? Because we love to talk about the revolution. What the fuck is it going to look like after that? What are we going to do? Okay, abolish prisons. What does that look like? What does that mean? People are coming out of prisons with real mental health issues and all sorts of things going on. How do we, what do we have prepared right now for that? You know, what if the Supreme Court says there's no more Roe versus Wade and abortions are illegal again? Are women going to have to go into, you know, alleys again? Or are we going to have abortion doulas or birthing doulas? Or, you know, like, are we going to do that now? Are we going to find a way to work this shit out now and then expand it later? Or are we just going to, you know, talk about how shitty it is? Like, I can't keep talking about how shitty it is. That has real consequences on my health, you know, like my mental health. It's hard for us who are older, especially who've been doing this a long time, to stay motivated, man. So this shit motivates me.
Yeah, and it's, and you know, and it makes you feel better when you see somebody smile after you've done, you know, after you've...
Absolutely.
Well, one thing I learned is there's this herb, this amazing herb in Colorado in the Rocky Mountains. It's the most medicinal herb that grows in North America. It's called OSHA, and it's like a euphoric kind of root. Bears eat it when they come out of hibernation, and it makes them like all aphrodisiac and hugging each other, and like, and it's like when you have a flu coming on, it's a great thing to take. But it's also, from what I've researched it, if you take it when you're pregnant, it can cause an abortion. So,
uh-oh, I think you're breaking up now.
I was just saying it's a birth preventative. It can cause abortions.
Gotcha.
If you if you get into that, you know, link up with some comrades in the Rocky Mountains who forage OSHA root, because it's a powerful plant. Well, we're at 1:15, and that's, you know, I try to keep these under an hour.
Absolutely, hour, I understand. So, you just had good questions.
Well, no. I mean, when I say I try to, it means they usually go at least an hour and a half, so it's all good. But, you know, it's a free country. So I didn't want to not talk about your new album, you know, because you're a musician. And that's why we're having this conversation, because you're a dope rapper. And your new album is, I don't know how new it is, but it's called, your most recent album, it's called Trap Liberation Army. It's, you know, and I love it because with a lot of, like, quote-unquote activist rap, it's, you know, it's not stylish the way that I want it to be, as far as, like, how people are rapping and
the delivery, yeah.
Like, for instance, you're the first person to rhyme Adidas with Molotov.
You caught that, huh? Yeah, you know, that's just the era I come from. Like I said, you had to stand out. Like, I want to say no diss to the new generation, but there's a slight diss because, like in trap, everybody kind of sounds the same. So trap liberation was like, let's liberate ourselves from this staccato delivery and you know, use hip hop, because I like... Public Enemy was dope as hell to me, and Dead Prez, and they made that shit seem cool, you know, like, oh man, you could talk about deep shit and Boogie Down Production, like, you could talk about deep shit and say it in a cool way. So that's really what Trap Liberation Army is. It's like the modern version of that, and just talking about shit that's going on in the world, in the hood, as a radical, and just mixing it all up, because it doesn't have to be a separate, you know, separate thing. And it's been received really well. The record label that I'm with, we used to be a part of the Zulu Nation, and when we broke away from Zulu Nation, we just formed our own, you know, entity. It's called Soul Trust Records, based out of Norfolk and Virginia Beach, and it's awesome to have a label with our friends. It's, you know, on that real DIY spirit. Of just, you know, doing it ourselves, like, fuck it. We've all been through the ringer, you know, trying to get record, you know, deals and things of this nature. But with all the technology and stuff that's out now, we were like, why can't we try it ourselves? And so I got to learn a lot more about the industry through, you know, the conversations that I had with the crew. And I recorded it, you know, we recorded it in our own studio. We made the art for it. We printed it up, like, we did everything and put out there. And it's been really dope. Guerrilla Republic has been really dope. You know, bigging up my music and, you know, pushing it out there. It's not a lot of women get shine in underground or mainstream. We already know this. It's bullshit. So, I've had a lot of, like, really respected artists, you know, bigging up the work that I'm doing. I don't mind being an underground artist. It keeps me, you know, it keeps me grounded. I just love this art form and being able to, you know, to do what I do. And we have a lot of events here at this space at Maroon House. We just had a battle. We just had a beat battle. You know, I get to, you know, rock the microphone and introduce people to all these producers. And our record label was there last night. I didn't perform any of my stuff this time, but the last time we took it to Brooklyn and we performed some of Trap Liberation Army. I used the proceeds to go towards the Maroon House and our collective that runs it, Food, Clothing, Resistance Collective. So I still just take my music and use it for, you know, political purposes. And it's been working. It's... We're actually working on another product right now to follow up with this one, and to maybe do a little touring. Like, maybe we can hit up where you're at, or, you know, some of the other comrades I just got introduced to, and, you know, link up and stuff and bring you here to D.C. because D.C. really needs some anarchist rap that's not, you know, not stiff and corny, but, like, as the kids say, has bop to it. I'm just trying to keep it fresh, and, you know, it doesn't have to be boring. I don't think it has to be boring just because we're talking about shit, you know.
Right. I mean, it has to actually, you know, it's one of the things one of the homies from Crime Think says is, like, you know, if you're going to be an anarchist guitar player, you have to be the best guitar player. If you're going to be an anarchist, you know, painter, you have to be the best anarchist. You have to be the best painter, you know. And I like that it raises the stakes a little. And, you know, my wife's family is from Northern Virginia, so I'll be knocking on your door.
Word. Yeah, we don't have enough Virginia MCs that get shine, so we have a lot of producers and stuff, but the MCs don't get enough shine, so we had to big it up for Virginia and just show that, you know, we got bars all day. We got a lot of influences that came through Virginia, and so we got like a heavy East Coast. Like, people are always confused about my flow. I guess they thought it would sound more Southern, but I have an East Coast flow because that's just the influences that I had growing up. I mean, I listen to West Coast, Midwest. I listen to all of that, but most of the shows and artists that I got to see, you know, that really influenced me were mainly on the East Coast. So my flow is more of a, like an East Coast type of flow. But, you know, very much, like I said, cipher related, you know, punchlines, you know, mixing it up. You know, I come from the school of KRS-One. And he would be dropping knowledge and then diss somebody in the same track. And I was like, that's what I want to do when I make music. I want to like say some profound shit and then shit on you lyrically because I still want to have fun with it, you know? So yeah, that's what Trap Liberation Army is about. It's an homage to Tupac, the Black Liberation Army, you know, the hood that's out now in the trap, getting out of it, staying political, keeping hip hop at its roots. It's on SoundCloud. Some clips are on SoundCloud. A couple songs I think are up there. It's on Bandcamp and Amazon and iTunes and all those capitalist spots. I'm trying to invade their spots and put a little anarchist rap up there.
Oh yeah, so buy the album on Bandcamp, then go play it 1,000 times on Spotify.
Hell yeah. So I mean, it's uploaded on all of the you know, most of the major spots. But like you said, the Bandcamp, that's the one that I directly get, like that immediately drops. And then we can spend that, you know, for our mutual aid programs and shit like that. But I'm interested in working on another one now. We're getting work on it. The brother from UK, I'm linking up with him again. His name is Endemic. And it's going to be pretty cool. I got some production from my son also. And I think I'm going to use a couple tracks from our local VA DMV crew called Beat Conductors that does all the producer battles that that I've been talking about. So it's going to have a wide variety, but I'm going to stick to the theme of talking shit and dropping knowledge because, you know, that's what I do.
Yeah, that's awesome. I look forward to hearing it. I also really like the production on it, and I think that's you know, something that a lot of you know, radical artists, you know, we need to take serious that it's music, you know, and like if the beat, you know, the beat sucks, no one's gonna listen to what you have to say. So
I'm losing your signal a little bit, brother.
Saying if the beat sucks, no one's gonna listen to the lyrics. So you had good production.
That happened a lot to Nas. Like, everybody loves Nas's flow, but Nas's beats were kind of not always the best beats. And people are always like, why didn't Nas get more success? I think that was why. The beats. It's just the beat selection. It doesn't take away from the artist, but it can... I felt that way about a lot of backpack rap, too. It wasn't that the artists weren't good. You know, I used to listen to, like, Sage Francis and... You know, I can't even think of the names of half the cats that I used to listen to back in the day. They were like down with Ruckus and shit, but the beats sometimes were kind of boring. It's like, lyrically they were incredible though, but it's just like the beat was just like snooze fest. So I try to keep the beats. If I don't like the beat, if I'm not going to nod my head, I know that people aren't going to nod their head to the beat. And I got to perform this shit, so I can't have a beat that's just like a snooze fest. So I try to keep it like a mid to up tempo. You know, to go with my flow. I think a lot of artists don't get beats that match their flow. You gotta get beats that match your flow. And it's just, you know, after a while, you kind of know what works and what doesn't. So I stick to what works.
Amen. Shout out to Sage Francis. That's my homie.
No, he's dope. Totally. No, all day long. Like, I was listening heavily. I think a lot of us were influenced to Sage by Sage Francis. And, you know, just A$AP Rock and, you know, a lot of cats like that.
That's my generation. All right, well, anything on your heart that we've missed in this conversation that feel like listeners need to know?
Just that we need to get real and stop worrying so much about mobilizing and start organizing more. You know, stop the celebrity culture worship, nonprofit model of organizing, and just get back to the grassroots of it. Just, you know, it's getting kind of fake out here, and you know, like it's kind of see through. Like we have a more and more organized, you know, far right and the left. I don't know what the fuck we're doing sometimes. It just looks like we're just all over the place, and we just need to get coordinated now, whether that's coalition work or whatever, but it's got to be more than lectures and we went somewhere and did, you know, bang some pots. Like, that shit's not helping in the long run with the real serious problems that we have with white supremacy and capitalism. And I'm saying that for all types of organizations, including Black Lives Matter. Like, we've got to get into these communities and counter what's going on and build some actual power. And it's okay to defend yourself. We don't have to always, and we don't always have to, why do we fucking care about always trying to get co-signed by mainstream media or the right? Like, fuck them. Like, we're not here to win their hearts and minds. We're trying to get the people. And I think we miss that. We're so busy trying to be liked, and we don't want people to be upset with us, and so we don't do this or we don't say that. I don't give a fuck. I'm trying to get someone's foot off my throat. I'm trying to live. And so I just wish that we would take it a little bit more serious. The left in general, not just anarchists, but everybody, take this shit more serious, because we could be going into, I mean, we got another 2 years of this motherfucker. Like, I don't know what it's going to be in the next 2 years for Black people, for brown people, for queer people, for trans people, for those who are locked up in prison, you know, eating one hot dog and fucking white rice. You know, like, this shit is real. I wish we would take it as such. Theory is nice. Studying is nice. Political education is nice. But if it's not relevant and tangible to the people, then it's just fucking a circle jerk. And it's not going to get us free. And it's not going to stop these fucking terrorists from coming into our communities and our synagogues, our mosques, you know, our schools, and blowing us away. I don't want to feel like that anymore. I want to feel strength and power amongst my comrades, that we're good and we have each other's back. So I just need people to step it the fuck up, you know? That's all. That's the last thing I want to say. Step it the fuck up, left.
Well, you know, the only thing I'll add to that is, like, all that shit is real, but then also we have, like, you know, sea level rise, global warming, automation. Like, there's no shortage of reasons why we live in really critical times, and the lack of like a real, like, real large scale resistance is staggering. I just don't understand.
It's scary to me. That shit is scary. You know, I mean, I big up Europe, though. I'm not going to lie, though, because I get hope when I see the European comrades. I'm like, OK, all right. You know, and also Latin America, like, they're getting it in, like, they're organizing. Like, we are in the U.S., though, we need to catch up to what they're doing and take this shit more seriously, because you're right. Like, once the waters are, you know, completely full of plastic, and we are, too, then what? You know, we're almost at that point right now, so we got to get this shit together ASAP.
Right on. Well, let's get it together then.
Word.
So if people,
let's get that album together too.
I'm
plug.
I'm so down. I'm so down. That sounds so exciting and fun. I haven't, like, done a collaborative project with rappers for like fucking 20 years, so I'd be pumped. And yeah, to people listening, like, we've just kind of Simile, and is it? I mean, that's, I was like, I caught this pun, but did you pronounce it Sima or Sima?
It's Simile, like, yeah, the, like, yeah, metaphors and similes. Yeah,
we're, and Lee Reed have been kind of talking online about making some music, so we'll see what happens with that. And if people want to check out your work, what's the best way to follow you on all the corporate media platforms?
I'm at Simile RBG, so that's SimaleeRBG. Again, bandcamp.com, simile.bandcamp.com. That'll take you directly to that page where you can hear the whole Trap Liberation Army. You can bob your head to that. And if you want to throw some change at the movement, appreciate it. It goes right back to the community here in Northeast DC. And add me on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. Love to talk to you, comrade. Send me a message. You want to collaborate, let me know. You want to come and visit Maroon House, let me know. And if you want me to come to your area and just check out what you're doing with your co-op, your commune, your intentional community, let me know, because I'm always loving to connect with other like minds. And I thank you for having me up here, brother. Your music is dope, and so this is really nice. Big ups to Stimulator for connecting us.
Yeah, for sure. I was watching the documentary. I was like, where the fuck did you find her? What the fuck, man? Like,
yeah,
damn,
man, that was lit. and now I'm really building with quite a few of the artists that were on that documentary. So big ups to them.
Awesome. Well, you know, have a great day, and you know, don't let the passions get you down.
No way, brother. You have a good one too. All power to the people. Peace.
Taste out a racist mouth, and that's how true they. Them redheads can catch hot shots, pop up their toupee. Touche, simile, please watch what you say. That lad in that DC water must get you goofy. Nothing on my newest mission. Snatching mics like Bob did, new addition. Doing dabs in the kitchen, giving jabs if you snitching. Strictly for goons in they rooms. Blunts and tunes, some MF Doom. Motos not put the gun away. Simile from Young's Park, a dark slave runaway. Nothing but a lion coming right where the hunters stay. Honey on the interstate, would you know no imitate? Would you know the difference if you always listen to the fake? But this is soul trust. We turn everything we do into gold dust. When all of your golden caps turn to old rust, we did debunk to the fortress. We gorgeous. Light it up, 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 light it up. Black Indian hood, red so barrio. If the track breaks back, it's probably Waliro. In the booth, it's a fact that I'm a prodigal. Dump the pack in the grinder, break it to particles. Yeah, my heart is bold. Thug life is hard to hold on to. Taking all that cheddar, making fondue. They taking everything like China did to Rob True. Standing rock, down to a rock, they trying to bomb you. That's why we mob trolls. So when my crew mask up, it's just like a Luke song. Face down and ass up. Black Liberation Army at the brink, trunk. Hands off the Honda, free Mutulu. What you think, bruh? See, everybody wanna be the vanguard. Gots to be damn smart to handle these land sharks. No names and numbers, remember the landmarks. Roll up on them pigs and politicians where they vans park is on. Light it up, 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 light it up.